Hello and welcome. My name is Peter Sumpton, marketing consultant and Lego master of marketing. And you're listening to the Marketing Study Lab podcast live. Well, this bit isn't live, but the rest of it is. You'll hear a bit about that later. I mean, now. Well, let's crack on. These episodes are taken from my live show, Marketing And, where we look at the relationship between marketing and a specific topic, subject, or specialism. Sometimes there'll be guests, other times it'll just be me. So let's get cracking. Hello, Douglas Burdett. Welcome.
Hi, good to be here.
Fantastic. I've waited ages to get you on here because today we're going to talk... What were you saying, sorry?
I was on once before.
Yes, so that's the Marketing Study Lab podcast. So this is the live. So we've stepped it up a gear for this one.
Okay. Oh, pressure's on. Great.
No pressure at all. But I've been waiting ages for this one because decided for you to hop on this live at the end of the year because of what you do for your labor of love rather than your day job. And I think it's a really good way to summarize what's been happening throughout the year in marketing and in and around the topic of marketing. So first and foremost, could you just give the listeners a brief intro to yourself and what you do?
Sure. So I live in Virginia, have a small marketing agency. We like to work with manufacturers and industrial companies. And in my free time, that's a joke, I do this marketing book podcast, which I've been doing for almost 6 years now. And it's the Marketing Book Podcast, where each Friday I publish an interview with the author of a new marketing or sales book. And this year I crossed the 300 episode number. So 300 books on the show. And when I started the podcast, I was about 10 episodes in because I had read those books. And that's when I realized I was actually going to need to read each book before each interview. So it was sort of like taking the wrong exit on the motorway or the realizing, oh, well, okay, I guess I'm going to read a book every week. So, but I do that and it's been really good for me. And I've enjoyed it. I like learning and I like helping people. And I hear from, it's in over 150 countries now. And I hear from people all around the world pretty much every day. They message me on LinkedIn and, you know, tell me that they listen to the podcast or that they find a particular book or interview helpful, or more often than not, they ask me what for book recommendations. So I don't want anyone, not even Peter Sumpton, to have to read 300 books to find the right one. So it's really, it only takes a few seconds. I'm able to say, oh, I know just the book you should read for that particular challenge you're describing. So that's also for any of your viewers or listeners, please connect with me on LinkedIn and I can provide any kind of recommendations to books or other resources that I know of for whatever challenge folks are facing. The only thing I ask is that you include a message so I know that what you're up to and you're not some spam bot.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a given nowadays, isn't it? We've all got to interact a little bit better than just subscribe, connect, follow, or whatever we're doing in the world. Just as a side note, so you realize before we get into a few takeaways from 2020 and what to look forward to in 2021, so you realized a few episodes in that you'd have to read a book a week. For me, I've never been a strong reader. It's something that I'm not ashamed of, but I don't like the fact that I'm a strong reader, and I've never managed to get into books as such. You clearly liked or enjoyed reading, unless you wouldn't have started what you did. But how do you do that? Keep up that consistency of reading a book a week, or is it just, well, I find it quite an easy task.
Well, you build it into your routine, and it's only one book a week. Sometimes more. It's just one, and so on weekend mornings, I may spend a couple hours reading, which is not, you know, it's not bad for me. And then a couple mornings during the week, you know, before work, I will read the book, and then I just do the one interview a week, and it's on Fridays. And It's just kind of part of the routine. It's probably like a lot of people, a lot of your viewers might be people who exercise regularly. And I do that. But it's just something you build into your routine. And so I do that, but maybe I should explain a little bit more about what compels me from an emotional standpoint.
Yeah, please.
I came from, this is the motivation for doing it. I don't do it for a living, but I came from this advertising background. I worked at these enormous ad agencies back in the 30 years ago in New York. And then when I started my own firm almost 20 years ago, it was a real advertising focused firm. And advertising is a shadow of its former self. Okay. And so I saw that things were starting to change, but I could see they were starting to change permanently. And I kind of felt like I was too young to retire, and I was, I didn't know what to do. So what I did was I went back to what I had done in grad school after I got out of the Army, whereas I was just reading books about different career fields and knocking around until I found something I liked. And an author, a friend of mine, recommended I go into advertising. And I asked a professor in school, and she gave me a copy of Ogilvy on Advertising. And this was the 1980s. So I thought, I read that book, and it changed everything for me. I said, that's what I want to do. I'm excited about that. And that's how I went off in that direction. So what happened was, when I still had advertising clients, but I was seeing everything was starting to change. And I kind of went back to just throwing myself in the books, hoping I would, find something. And I stumbled upon David Merriman Scott's book, The New Rules of Marketing and PR, first or second edition. It's now in its seventh edition. And then I saw it, that's where it's going. I felt like I had another bite at the career apple. It was just the right book at the right time can really transform things. Hmm. The other issue is that I was, as an ad guy, I was starting to have to bring website people to my meetings with clients. And clients were slowly starting to ask me about these, the internet and this Google thing and what was clearly a fad, social media. So I started to feel really irrelevant. Like I was growing dinosaur scales, and I just hated that more than most people. So that's when I really threw myself into the books after, picking up on David Merriman Scott's, and I started to see how that could kind of fuel some hope and some, new direction. And I was always listening to marketing podcasts, and I particularly enjoyed podcasts where they interviewed authors. So I guess at some point I said, I want to try this podcasting thing. And so I kind of started the podcast that I wanted to listen to, but it was this one episode in my adult, my career, working life, where I was really starting to feel irrelevant. And I really, really didn't like that. So that's what kind of fuels my interest in reading. And like I said earlier, it's really a lot of fun to do it when I hear from people who say, hey, you're, podcast has helped me get a new job, or it's helped me with ideas at work. And there's really nothing better than helping. I mean, look what you do.
And thank you for that. But I got onto your podcast through John Espiri and said, check this podcast out and listen to the first one. And because it was about books and I'm not a very strong reader, it's like, this is just music to my ears. You mean I can listen to this author talk about what's in his book without reading the book and get the number one points off it? This is fantastic. Keep it coming. And I've been a fan ever since. So it's
I'm gonna keep doing it. Thanks, Dalton.
yeah, there's no getting off this wheel. But the thing that I really liked about what you were saying then was the fact that you recognized the fact that things were changing, and you didn't have that skill set to cope with what was changing in the world. And a lot of people don't have that skill to want to change and to feel that, well, I don't know and understand this digital stuff or this technology stuff or this iPhone thingy. I'll just ignore it and I'll try and curve my career around it and play on the I don't know card. And, it's kudos to you to recognize that and do something about it, because I don't think a lot of people do.
Yeah, there's a lot of people out there that are still the news release experts. That's like the HubSpot founder, he referred to marketers that didn't have a lot of skills as he called them press release hires, meaning that was all they knew how to do was he doesn't hire those kind of people, but it's sort of a, or, you know, fax marketing, fax advertising, you know? So you know,
was that a thing?
Yeah, you could buy some service where it would basically send a fax out promoting, you know, like an ad. But then I think, at least in the United States, they cracked down on that so that they weren't clogging up fax machines. You know, marketers ruin everything.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
Or it only takes a few, you know.
I mean, I remember seeing a fax machine, fax coming through. The only faxes that ever came through were adverts trying to sell toner for the faxes. And I just thought it was quite ironic that you're trying to sell toner for a fax machine that has got enough ink to print the fax. And if it didn't, then you wouldn't get the ad. I just thought that I liked the irony behind that.
Yes, yes. Well, I guess they were hoping that you'd be able to read some of it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Excellent. So that's a bit of background, which is all well and good. But what I'd like to do is focus on 2020 and your learnings from the books that you've read throughout this year, of which... actually, before we do that, take me through the gap in... Well, I suppose it was a gap, but the gap in the Marketing Book podcast where it was Author with Cocktails. Well, where did that come from?
Well... It came from my muse.
Everybody knows your muse.
A shout out to my Scottish listeners. And actually, you know what? I know you people think I just drink all day here. I just got a bottle of wine from a past guest, Jim Stern, author of AI, about a book about marketing and artificial intelligence. What happened was I didn't have a gap. I continued to publish interviews with authors every Friday. But when the lockdown started in March, I think I had the last operation in the United States. I had my shoulder repaired and so that I can go back to playing for the New York Yankees. And it was one of those... rotator cuff things.
I think and, I need to play for the Giants. Sorry.
Yes. So, I was at home. I had the thing and I was at home anyway, but then we had an office and everyone left the office. Nobody wanted to come back. I think they were trying to get away from me and I can't blame them. And then, I started hearing from listeners who were saying, gosh, I just got laid off. What, I need to reinvent myself. I need to, you know, they were sharing with me, they were saying, what could I do? And I was really happy to hear from them despite the bad news so that I could maybe offer them some comfort or something to go do, you know, to get back on the horse. And at the same time, my son, who's a paramedic, he was out there on the front lines of all this. And I just thought, you know, there's some really brave people doing wonderful things. And I thought, what could I do? And I thought, you know, why don't I just have a daily episode, except on Fridays, where I would interview past guests who'd been on the show and ask them what they thought about what was going on. Because everybody was kind of wondering, trying to figure out what the new normal is and what they're doing. So with a nod to Jerry Seinfeld, Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee, I started Authors in Quarantine Getting Cocktails. And so we would have the interview later in the day, you know, the cocktail hour. I don't want all your people thinking I drink this all day.
We know this 9 a.m. till 10 a.m. That's that's sacred.
Yeah. And it is after noon right now in the East Coast. So I guess I can pour myself a glass there. But so what happened was, what was interesting to me is I said, all right, I'm thinking about doing this. And I sent an email out to the over 200 authors that have been on the show in the past. And I said, hey, I'm thinking about doing this, just a daily show where I can reintroduce you to the audience and the listeners, and we can talk about what you're thinking, what you're working on, you know, what do you think? And within 1 hour, over 100 authors responded and said, I'm in. I'm at home. I'm not traveling. I'm not speaking. And a probably statistically significant number said, Doug, I'm already drinking. So I'll talk to you. So I launched it, and I got through 66 episodes. So that went from like the beginning of April through the very beginning of July. And then my my liver needed a rest. So no, but what I did was I would then publish every day except for Friday. Didn't want to interrupt that cadence. And then I cut it back to Monday through Thursday. And I, that's how I got through 66. And it was really great. And it was really particularly good for my family, because it meant that there was at least an hour where they weren't having to talk to me or listen to me, particularly my my kids, who are now in their 20s, who were here, but then they've since moved on. And so it was really fun. And they even got some accolades from, you know, some top blogs, you know, saying, you know, this is a good thing to be listening to right now. And so I was, again, very excited to see that people found found value in it. And it was really that's what that was: authors in quarantine getting cocktails, and but continued on with the regular scheduled programming.
Lovely. So Ken, hi Ken. He says, I think it's time to return to quarantine cocktails. So I think you might have started a trend there.
Oh, really? Oh my goodness. So are there people making, can we see what people are, messages?
Yeah. We've got a couple of messages. Haven't got a huge audience, but those that do, I'll share any with you.
I see it.
So James says he's not a strong reader also, and he's subscribed to the podcast already. So there you go.
That's great, James. You know, we can all learn in different ways. Mm-hmm. You know, we're all different learners, different ways. And honestly, I continue. It's great having the podcast, because I know that people are expecting an episode once a week. So it's sort of like, okay, well, I'll read the book. So I kind of, it's like having a workout partner. All of my audience is my workout partner. Ken Olemeyer is a friend in St. Louis, longtime listener. And once we were at a conference in Boston, he actually bought me a couple of scotches, and I still remember that. And yeah, you know, and actually he's also an adjunct professor at Washington University in St. Louis. And he had me Skype into his class, and a growing number of academics have me do that, where I'm, you know, they have the students listen to the show, and then I Skype in and answer questions, or, you know, do things like that. So if there's any academics out there, I just heard from one today at Hofstra, who said, hey, you know, maybe you can come and talk to my class at the end of the semester or something like that. So I'm happy to help. And why, Peter? Because I believe children are our future, and we should treat them well and let them lead the way.
I there's a song in there somewhere. I can't. We're onto something.
And show them all the beauty they possess inside. So. There you are. I'm sorry. You have a very respectable audience, and here I am just cutting up. Sorry.
You're fine. It's, you know, it's like you say, it's way past 10 a.m. So I'm pretty sure. Anyway, okay. Let's get to it then with the time that we have left.
Let's offer some value.
Yeah. Why the hell not? No, I'm enjoying myself, so that's all that matters. Let's face it. So take us through some of the main themes that you've seen, or the main takeaways that you've got from some of the books that you've read this year then.
Well, what I did was, once the pandemic started, I changed up some of the books or looked at four particular books I knew they were going to be really helpful right at that time. So there have been books about virtual selling. That was episode 300 by Jeb Blunt. A fantastic book. There was a book called Can You Hear Me? Communicating in a Virtual World, which was actually written 2 years ago. But once the pandemic happened, the author was on everyone's list. And that was a very interesting book. And there was a book by Rohit Bhargava about virtual work, which was very helpful. Let me see. I'm sorry. I don't want to do injustice to his, it was called, I've got him here. The Memory Goes First, Peter. Let's see. It was called, Virtual Meetings. I'm sorry. His was called Virtual Meetings. Terrific book. And then there was another book by David Merriman Scott called Standout Virtual Events. So there were, I was just trying to adjust it, the content, to things that I wanted to learn more about and read about. And I know that the audience was wrestling with. So those were some of the things that we, you know, that were, I guess you could say that was what was unique about this year's books, was that thread.
And the virtual events conversation you had with David was interesting, because I do a lot of workshops and a lot of online workshops and utilize a lot of tools that he was talking about. But some of them, it's just a case of exploring whatever you're using, or exploring a couple of different options. And they have loads of different things like breakout rooms and just simple things that can enhance what you're doing. And if you're not that proficient in those types of things, it's easy to miss those.
It is. One of the big, one of the many things I learned from his book was this notion of live events, which we all like and I think are better, are like theater, live theater. Virtual events are much more like television. So the mistake is in trying to turn our paradigm of a live event into this virtual event. And sort of like when television first came out, they put a TV camera in the radio studio and you'd see people with a microphone and an orchestra and they would be reading scripts. They didn't quite understand the medium well. They were just taking what they had learned in an earlier medium and were trying to adjust it. And that's exactly what we've been doing. And some of the best virtual presenters are, don't be surprised, a lot of them are good YouTubers because they understand that medium. And he talked about how just because somebody's a great speaker at a live event might mean that they're horrible and have not adjusted at all to the virtual space. Very different animals.
Yeah, it definitely worth noting, and that's a really good analogy there, taking it way back. If there was, I mean, you must have had a lot of different takeaways from everything you've read. Is there anything that stands out as almost a, oh yeah, I can do that, I can implement that, that is absolutely golden? Is there anything this year that's stood out?
Well, every single book I read, I end up writing something in it about, oh, we should do that. We should try that. You know, tweaks we can do for clients. But I'll tell you one. This is from a personal standpoint. It's, as you can imagine, I have a lot of books. These are just the ones I got this week. But there was a book that was on not too many weeks ago called The Revenue Growth Engine. And from the standpoint of an agency guy that's trying to help clients, it really put together a lot of things that I'd been struggling with. And it put it together in a way that I'm going to be making some changes to how we help clients. And specifically, one of the biggest problems I have, and apparently others do too, is trying to get companies to figure out some kind of goal. Believe it or not, maybe it's just my clients, but it's like,
no,
what are we trying to accomplish? And most companies, I know I'm speaking with a broad brush here, and maybe it's the smaller ones that I deal with, they just don't have any goals. Sell more, get our what's the other one that drives me nuts? We just need to get our name out there. No, you need to do that. You don't need to get your name out there. You need to get your name out there to the right people. And you don't have to do television advertising to do it. But if we can go to clients and say, look, let's just talk about revenue. And as you know, I'm always talking about that on the podcast, where marketers really need to get into the revenue camp. I mean, a lot of times we're working with companies that don't have marketing people, but still he put it together in a way that talked about how another thing that I'm always talking about was, and I've had other books about this, is if I had a dollar to spend on marketing, I wouldn't spend a nickel on trying to get new customers until I had done everything I could to make sure I'm providing a good experience to my current customers and selling as much as I can to them. They want to buy more from you. They companies like you more than a lot of companies.
Yeah.
Customers like you more than a lot of companies think they do.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a big one. Yes, this talks about getting net new customers, but it also weaves in very nicely the idea of you've got to structure your experience with your customers. You know, you need to do what was funny about the book was that there must be 15 books that talk about that have been on the show that talk about very specific elements of this, but this put it together. So that's one, but there are so many books where it's just like I've spent a bunch of time with an author and not in the interview, but just I absorbed so much. So that's an example of one where I just thought I really like that. And I'll give you an example. One of the questions I think you were going to ask was what are some really good marketing books to read? Can I answer that or?
Absolutely. Yeah, no, you go for it.
The best marketing books to read right now. I think that's what you said. Yeah. And one of them is The New Rules of Marketing and PR, but make sure to read the 7th edition. Mm-hmm. And it is fantastic. And that's one of the two books, as I mentioned, the two books that have had the biggest impact on my career are both by guys named David, David Ogilvy and David Merriman Scott. And I'm such a fan of his. He was the very first guest on the Marketing Book Podcast. Wow. And he's now been on 6 times. So he's tied for first place. And trust me, those 3 authors and that are in first place, they're very competitive authors. So I'm just saying, you know, competition going on. But that is one that I recommend that every week to somebody who's saying, hey, I've been an engineer and now I'm suddenly in charge of marketing. What am I supposed to do? I'll say, read that. There's another book that is one of my all-time favorites. And it's They Ask, You Answer by Marcus Sheridan. Mm-hmm. I think that is one of my favorite books. It's sort of like reading Daryl Amey's book where it just put together so many things so well and it made so much sense. And a lot of the things that are in They Ask, You Answer by Marcus Sheridan, I've seen why it works so well. And so I'm a real evangelist. And actually, I interviewed him a week ago about his book, published the interview on the visual sale, all about using video for sales. Excellent book. So that's another one, They Ask, You Answer, but read the 2nd edition. I've interviewed him about both the first, but the 2nd edition has 100 extra pages, and a lot of that's about your website and video. And there's another book that I wanted to suggest by Grant Leboff, who is a Brit, and his book is called Myths of Marketing.
Yes.
I don't know if you heard that interview.
Yes, it did. Yeah.
That was one of the best interviews I've done. And I've interviewed some of these authors are just so great to interview. But now, full disclosure, now you're a Liverpool fan, as is John Asperian, who was a guest this year. And I tell you, I was a fan of John's, but now I'm even a bigger fan now that I've read his book and had the chance to talk to him. But the book was Myths of Marketing, and it was like 26 myths, and it was a great interview. And he had about 75 of these myths. But the thing about that book is that as a marketer, I had thought I was taking crazy pills, dispelling all these myths that people have about marketing. And he put 26 of them in that book. And Liverpool, he's a Watford fan. And as I understand it, they've been relegated.
Yeah.
Are you impressed with my knowledge of English?
You never cease to amaze me, Douglas, to be fair. You just don't, particularly with your knowledge of all things English. You say they were, let's big up Watford here, because Liverpool were unbeaten in the league and it looked like they were going to go unbeaten until they played Watford and Watford beat them last season. So kudos to Watford for breaking that streak as well.
Yeah, I can imagine that. And we had it after the interview. We must have talked for another hour about that. And I'm new to this EPL thing, but I just, I'm fascinated. I watched that Sunderland Till I Die documentary, and then we can watch it on Saturday and Sunday mornings here on the East Coast of the U.S. And it's just, I don't know, it's really fascinating. And then I got to be honest with you. I have a man crush on David Meerman Scott and Marcus Sheridan. I also have a man crush on your Liverpool coach.
Jurgen Klopp.
Yeah, man. I could just watch that guy talk all day. He's really charismatic, and he's not a bad looking guy. So yeah. I don't know. I'm sure I've alienated every other fan of every other team, but there you go. So.
See, the thing is that even our, you call them rivals, if you like, even our rivals turn around and go, yeah, fair play to Jurgen Klopp. He's frustratingly charismatic, which is just amazing. It's just brilliant to see it. Just going back to those myths, I listened to that episode and it was so satisfying because it almost felt like I could put my soapbox away for the day and let someone else just stand in it and go, and another thing. And
it was like a support group reading that book. And absolutely. It's like, I can't tell you how many of those I tried to explain to people. And it's just, it makes my heart hurt. The companies think some of these things about marketing. And I just thought it was a terrific book. And we should mention Content DNA by John Asperian. Yeah. And for a variety of reasons, he's such a fantastic writer. And he's just as nice a guy as he is a great writer.
That's annoying, isn't it?
I interviewed him the day after Liverpool clinched the championship.
Okay.
I think it was. And so, of course, I had to say, so, John, are you tired? Have you been out all night setting cars on fire? He's not one of those fans. He's more like Peter.
Yeah, something like that. Okay, I'm really conscious of time, and we've run over a bit, but there's just one other thing that
I'm clearly not, so I'm just kidding.
There's just one other thing that I just want to cover, and that's just looking towards 2021, because as any decent marketer should be planning for 2021, if not have their plans sorted by now. So what is 2021 looking like? What's in store, do you feel? What should we be looking for? What should be on our radar?
Oh, I don't know. You know, it's this... Jeff Bezos, the Amazon founder, will say, you know, a lot of things are going to change. But the reason they've been so successful is he focuses on the things that are never going to change. So people want good prices, selection, fast, you know, otherwise the things change. So I would, I know this is a simple answer, but it's so difficult for companies to do. And that is to be interesting rather than interrupt what people are interested in, because you really can't interrupt people very well anymore. And trust me, as a former New York ad guy, we had a captive audience. We would buy a network television commercial and stuff would start happening. Mm-hmm. You know, we'd start selling a lot more soap. So I think that the more that this is the most successful companies, the most successful marketers are the ones that understand their customers best. And I know that's, I just see it in the real world. I see it with clients and all these books. It just talks about if you just understand your customers a little bit better, you're going to succeed. Mm-hmm. You don't have to be perfect. You just have to be a little bit better than the others. And I was talking to a company this week, and they, you know, they say, yeah, we got a lot of content. And I said, well, you know, basically, it's all product information. I said, and they said, well, you know, in this virtual world, we're having trouble breaking through. We're running pay-per-click. That's not really doing anything for us, such and such. And I said, well, you know, why don't you create content that's about your customers' problems that are related to what your product will do? Because we don't really have much interest in anyone's products. In fact, David Meerman Scott, he always says, no one cares about your product or service except you. Talk about problems rather than products, and you'll start to break through. And that's really simple advice, but it's it seems to be the bane of my existence in terms of trying to help companies be a bit more empathetic. And you know, there's a variety of books I can suggest, and it's for the marketers out there. One of the most effective things you can do for your career is to become the expert at your company on your customers. More so than the salespeople. Go and spend time with your customers at least once a month. Spend a day with your salespeople once a month. But go and understand your customers. Find out where the friction is in their life. What are their frustrations? What do they really want to achieve? You'll start to better understand how you and your products and services fit into the larger scheme of things in that customer's life, and it just helps dramatically.
I'm so glad you've gone there because you can ask a lot of people that question, or you can read, more importantly, read a lot of articles about what's hot in 2021, 2022, the future of marketing and all that kind of stuff. And the things that they talk about and the obvious, so, you know, more programmatic AI, elements, machine learning, AI, all that kind of stuff. And it's just no, because 90% of the companies will be nowhere near using that type of stuff. They just won't at all. But what you've just said there, it's just dial that notch up to, you know, that extra percent, that 1% better and better and better, and improvements, small scale improvements. So I'm so glad you didn't go on some crazy route.
This is the year of mobile. This is the year of AI, machine learning, influencer marketing. All these things are really important things to know about. One of their little tip for marketers out there: be careful what you say around civilians. And when I say civilians, I mean anyone at your company who doesn't work in the marketing department. I mean your management, your salespeople, anybody else. Please try to dial down the use of any marketing buzzwords. Mm-hmm. Don't go talking about buyer personas. Don't talk about content marketing, all these kinds of things. It's not helping you. Trust me when I tell you that. Talk about what they're interested in. Revenue growth, you know, attracting talent, keeping customers, you know, things like that. That's what they're more worried about. And the more that you talk about this marketing stuff, and I can, you know, there's any number of books I can point you to. In fact, there's a presentation I give that I update all the time about, you know, like the five most important things, the five most important ideas, or the five ideas that matter most from over 300 books or whatever. Mm-hmm. And those are a couple of things that I offer up to these folks. And people seem to find it helpful. So, you know what? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So, Ken just said, be more than the party planner. Become the customer-centric revenue generator.
Yes. So it's so true. You know, he's making a joke about something I'm always saying about a lot of people perceive marketers as arts and crafts party planners who work in the make it pretty department. And if that upsets you as a marketer, let it go. I mean, there are people who say bad things about Liverpool fans, but, you know, that doesn't, you know, maybe John will set someone's car on fire, but that doesn't really bother you. It's just a perception that people have out there. And if you understand that that's what a lot of people think about you, I mean, it doesn't mean they think you're a bad person as a marketer, but they just don't understand what marketing does. They think it's promoting the product, but it's actually quite a bit more than that. So yeah, good comment.
Yeah, absolutely. So just to wrap it up, one thing I want to say is that if you don't already, please subscribe to the podcast, obviously, but also follow Douglas on LinkedIn, purely for the comments. I can't remember the phrase, jokes I like to tell myself in the books he reads, because
as I'm reading a book, because I was always the class clown, I'll sometimes see something and I'll write a joke in there and I'll take a picture of it and put it on LinkedIn. It's called Jokes I Tell Myself While Reading Books. That's it. And if there's anyone out there that can connect with me on LinkedIn, include a message so I know you're not some spam bot, not a fem bot, as Austin Powers would say. I'm happy to send your viewers a Marketing Book Podcast laptop sticker.
Get that.
And a couple of bookmarks anywhere in the world. I got the stamps.
Mine, I can see mine. They're just over there. They're just next to my whiteboard. Good. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. As a reminder. Do it more.
Next time you go back to a live event, please let me know and I'll send you a stack of bookmarks.
Yeah, brilliant. I will.
A little swag for the Peter Sumpton peeps.
Rock on. Yeah, absolutely. Really appreciate that. Douglas, I could honestly spend hours and hours talking to you about marketing and the books you've read and the knowledge you've gained. Really could. I enjoy it all the time. Thank you so, so much for joining me today. And any final words you'd like to say to anybody that's watching?
2020 will be over soon. May we all have the most boring year next year.
Love it. Okay. Douglas, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you for kind words.
Thank you so much for joining us today on Marketing Study Lab. It really means the world that you're listening to this out there. And hopefully I've provided you some value. If you're looking to know more about what Marketing Study Lab does and is about, go to marketingstudylab.co.uk or get in touch with me personally, LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, or feel free to email me at peter@marketingstudylab.co.uk. Happy marketing.